welcome back to another edition of Hey, How'd You Get That Music Job? I am your host, L. Ariel, and we can be found at musicjobspodcast.com. That's musicjobs with an S, podcast.com. Welcome, welcome. Hope everyone is having a really good week so far, full of promise and productivity. We are streaming on iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher Podcasts, iHeartRadio, and TuneIn, and we do ask if you are listening to us on one of those streaming platforms or other streaming platforms, if you could give us some stars, show us some love, spread the good word so we can get up further in the rankings, let more people know about this Music Careers podcast. What is this podcast all about? For those of you who don't know, we interview the movers and shakers and innovators from all aspects of the music industry, finding out exactly how did they get their music job? How did they get to where they are today? What steps did they take? What obstacles did they face? What risks did they take, challenges overcome, etc. So always really, really interesting, very inspiring, and very empowering. So last week's guest was Dave Bogan. He describes himself as a serial music entrepreneur. He has started several businesses, including Tune Registry. He's also a music business industry consultant and just has an incredible story. He moved to LA essentially with just one suitcase and no place to stay and is now very well known in the music industry. So again, just a really inspiring story and really fascinating, unique career trajectory. And that's what we're all about. So this week, I am pleased to welcome to the podcast Brittany Spanos. She is a writer for the epic, the historic, the legendary Rolling Stone magazine, and she's going to share all about her career trajectory and how she got to write for such a famous music magazine. Just really great. And before we get started, I always love to play favorite tracks. So this is one of Brittany's favorite tracks. Here's Silver Springs by Fleetwood Mac. Hey, how'd you get that music job?
Thanks for having me.
Tell me about your first memories of music growing up. You know, what was your household like? What were your parents listening to? That kind of stuff.
All my entire family, they were all music obsessive. Like, they all kind of had an artist or genre that they were really, really into. So, like, my grandpa, like, my earliest musical memories are, like, my grandpa's pickup truck and, like, him blaring the oldies station out of the radio, like the oldies radio station in his car, and listening to the Beatles, and he loved Elvis, so we listened to that a lot. My mom was super into, she loved Prince and Michael Jackson when she was a teen.
Aww.
And so that was something that never really left.
Yeah.
And she got really into Alanis Morissette. Like, she was, you know, in her 20s in the 90s, so Alanis was her girl. Yeah, my grandma loved a lot of Motown stuff, and my dad listened to Metallica and a lot of metal. So my family, just like everyone, had really specific, you know, music tastes.
What was your preference, or what were you gravitating towards as you got older?
I really, really, I loved the oldie station. My grandpa played that. I loved, like, those, like, really kitschy kind of, like, novelty songs when I was a kid. And then once the boy band wave of the late 90s hit, that was my big obsession. Like, that was the first time that I had a music taste that was formed by myself, and that was the first time that I had artists that I loved because I had discovered them and loved them. So it was, like, NSYNC and Backstreet Boys. NSYNC were definitely my favorite, and I pretty much listened to anything that was playing off of Radio Disney just from ages 7 to about 10. So that was kind of my first real music obsession.
Yeah, and you're not alone. A lot of people, I think, have shared that, like, how much of an influence that boy bands had on them. What did you have any music aspirations, or did you take any lessons or anything like that?
I took violin lessons, so I started playing violin when I was around 7. But that was more just like my mom, she never was really forced to do anything when she was a kid. And so she kind of was like, she offered me the option of like, do you want to learn an instrument? Do you want to play a sport? Do you want, like, are there things that interest you? I like love the idea of learning the violin. So I played that for a long time, but it was never something that I wanted to do professionally. Mm-hmm. I loved playing the violin. I loved learning it. It was just kind of like a nice thing to do. It taught me a lot of discipline. But yeah, I never really had musical ambitions. I still, like, I would like to learn more instruments. I'd like to get back to playing the violin, but it was never something that I ever considered doing. Right. Performance was never something interesting to me.
Got it. So when you were in high school then and looking towards college or possible career, where were you headed or what was kind of your vision at the time?
Well, I was always really obsessed with going to college ever since I was in kindergarten. Like, the idea of going to college seemed so fascinating to me.
Aww.
And I'm not entirely sure why. And so I always kind of thought of my life in terms of like what my career would be. So I wanted to be a doctor for a long time when I was a kid, but that was just sort of like that seemed like a successful career that adults did. And so a reason to go to college. Mm-hmm. But my ambition for like becoming a writer had always kind of existed because I loved to read so much. And so the idea of being a writer was always like, I want to be a doctor and a writer. I want to be a lawyer and a writer. Like, it never left.
Mm-hmm.
But around the age of 12 was when I kind of realized that I could make a career out of writing about music. And I want to say it was watching Almost Famous for the first time. I'm not entirely sure if that's like the exact moment, but I do know that was a pretty formative moment for me. And I started subscribing to Rolling Stone and I subscribed to Spin then. And I was like just reading about music as much as possible, reading a lot of music books and a lot of stuff by Rob Sheffield and Chuck Klosterman and John Sellers. And yeah, ever since the age of 12, I knew that I wanted to be a music journalist. I knew I wanted to work for Rolling Stone. So that was it was like a very early decision that I made for myself that I'm glad that I haven't wavered from since, because it just determined a lot of what I wanted to do. So as soon as I figured out that being obsessed with music can also mean a potential career move, I like looked up where Rolling Stone was based, looked up journalism schools near Rolling Stone. So it turned out to be NYU, and that's where I went to college, was NYU. And now I also work at Rolling Stone. So it worked out nicely.
So yeah, I want to just hear a little bit more about that, because it is kind of unusual for a 12-year-old to be having this thought process. And I would think at 12, you'd be more interested in maybe like writing fiction or, you know, that type of thing. So what do you think it was about writing about music? Was it because you were like, I want to interview the boy bands? Or like, do you remember what drew you to writing about music?
Well, by that time, so my boy band love faltered around the age of 10 when all of them broke up. So that was like around 2002. And so then I started to get really into rock music then. So like in junior high, I was like a huge, huge grunge nerd. I loved pop punk. Like, I loved a lot of music that was like before my time. And so I was listening to like a lot of, this was like around 2002 to 2006. From like ages like 10 to 14, I was like really, really into rock music and loved like I got really into classic rock and I got really into punk and I got into metal and things like that. And a lot of it came from spending time with my mom and my dad and just listening to the music that they liked when they were in their teens and their 20s. And I got really into reading about all those bands. Like, I just found all of it really fascinating. Like, Nirvana was my favorite band. And still is my favorite band. And so I got really obsessed with like reading, like the Kurt Cobain journals had just come out around that time. So like he had like a list of albums in there that he loved. And I remember going back and like listening to those albums and wanting to listen to the music that the artists that I loved listened to. And so once I became really infatuated with that, and I did consider fiction for a little bit to go back to your question, but like that was something that I thought was the only way you could be a writer for a long time. And then I think it was just a matter of realizing that I wanted to do something with music, but I had no passion to perform it. But I was really invested in music history, and I liked learning about that. And that was something that I found really fun, was like I love discovering new music. I loved going to Tower Records and the Virgin Megastore and Best Buy and like going to the CD section and picking up CDs and like listening to new stuff or like listening to the radio. So yeah, I really liked music history, and I was just like a very nerdy kid. And so I really liked school and I liked learning stuff. And so that was something I couldn't do in school. Like it wasn't, you know, there wasn't a class in like music history in junior high, but it was just, yeah, it kind of, I'm trying to remember like the exact moment where I felt in place. And I want to say it was kind of like Almost Famous or like, you know, my family introducing me to those magazines and me going to the CD store and seeing like magazines and books that were about music history. But that was kind of the beginning of me learning that a nonfiction writing world existed outside of academia and like outside of like textbooks. And I can just kind of talk to these bands and nerd out with them and learn about the music that inspired them and learn about their process in a way that I was already starting to read about.
Yeah, I think that's really cool. I think also, you know, the word that comes to mind for you is like musicologist, you know, and,
yeah,
and those periods of time like grunge or punk, it is a really fascinating history that a lot of people don't really know. So I could see why you would be drawn to it. And I had a flashback of reading an interview with Sting in the 90s. I think it was in like Spin magazine. And I had always been like a Police fan, a Sting fan. And then when I read that interview, and that's when he was getting like super philosophical and spiritual. And I was like, oh my God. Like, I just remember every word of that article, like just totally resonating with me, that I got to sort of have this really intimate look at such an incredible, I believed, you know, music creator. So I can see the seductive power, you know what I mean, of inner, you know, possibly like interviewing or being part of that world. So you go, you apply and are accepted to NYU. What was your experience like there?
It was great. I mean, it was a big growing up experience for me. Like, I grew up in the Chicago suburbs, so it was just like, you know, me and my mom were really close. Like, I was a very protected only child, and it was really wild and exhilarating to go to school in the middle of New York City and like be on my own for real for the first time in such a big space. And also a place that like so much of the music history I became obsessed with came from New York. And so being near like Bleecker Street and having been, you know, really into kind of like Patti Smith, Bob Dylan, and that more folky history of New York's music scene and like the punk scene and things like that. Like, I love being at NYU, and I loved going to the classes that I took there. And I took a lot of music history courses because I did the Gallatin School of Individualized Study. So you make your own major. And I did that because the journalism school didn't really have like a good entertainment track or good like arts criticism or something a little bit more niche for what I was interested in studying. So I did the Gallatin School, so I did take a lot of courses in NYU's journalism school, and then I took a lot of courses in the Tisch School for Recorded Music.
Okay.
And so they had, it's a very small school, the Recorded Music program, but I took a lot of courses there that were open to kids that weren't in that immersive program. So I took like a course on the history of punk and a course on Sean Combs and urban culture and, you know, things that it was like really wacky, like 2-credit courses like that, that were just like 6-week intensives and a lot of just like basic nonfiction writing courses. And I loved every minute of it. Like, I really loved the college experience and I loved having that freedom to take very hyper specific classes. And I also started to explore outside of just music history. So I did a lot of film criticism classes and theater criticism. And I wrote about theater and film as well for my college newspaper. And that was like, I mean, it was always something, I've just always been a huge pop culture nerd. And I think music is always going to be my number one, but I'm glad that I explored other ways of writing about culture. And I mean, even when I was taking those courses, a lot of what I wrote about would end up coming back to music in some way. But yeah, it was a nice way. And I think that's helped me a lot, because even now I write about things that are not just about pop music, just because it's fun. And I do consume a lot of television and film and theater all the time. So that was kind of a nice way to expand out. But yeah, it was great. And it was nice to kind of have a lot of control over what my exact major was, because what I wanted to do was so specific.
Yeah, that is really cool. So did you do an internship, and when did you start doing internships?
Yeah, I did 2 internships while I was in college. I interned at the Lore magazine first, and that was my sophomore year.
Mm-hmm.
And that one was, I had met an older student in one of my courses who had interned there and recommended that I apply. It was actually not even an editorial internship. It was a fashion closet internship, and it was just, I had no idea. Like, I couldn't even pronounce any of the designers' names right, but I thought it'd be like really good research, and actually it came in handy for a lot of stuff just because fashion is so integral to pop music and to film and theater and like all those aforementioned aspects of pop culture that I was interested in.
Mm-hmm.
And it was more just like an educational experience and just something I could kind of do to really get my hands dirty and like learn about something I had no knowledge about. So that was my first internship. And then I interned at the Village Voice. I started an internship there when I was a junior. So it was like fall of my junior year. And I was doing calendar listings. And then the music editor, Brian McManus, had just started around then. And I ended up freelancing for him a lot while I was doing that semester of interning. And they didn't really have any like super specific rules for being an intern there. So after a while, I was kind of like working with Brian so much that I ended up staying there for the rest of college.
Oh, wow.
Literally from fall semester junior year until I got hired full time, like right before I graduated from college, just like that spring. But yeah, it was really only a semester of being an actual intern. And then it sort of turned into this like weird half intern, half like contract writer situation.
Mm-hmm.
Where I would write, it was supposed to be like only really like 2 posts a week, but I would review so many concerts that I was like writing daily, and I spent my summers there still working there. So it was just kind of like weaseled my way into the team.
I don't know if weasel's the right word. I mean, you're obviously like doing the work and helping them out considerably, but that's really cool.
I just lingered there for a long time.
Yeah, but they obviously loved you, and you were, you know, adding a lot of value. Were you affected at all, or I'm just curious about, you know, in that you're getting into an industry that was going through a lot of tumultuous change and downsizing and sort of uncertainty. Can you speak to any of that or what you observed or experienced?
I mean, the Village Voice was definitely one of the greatest victims of a lot of those industry changes and to a lot of the way media shifts so quickly and the way that a lot of long established and really great publications can kind of get really fucked over by that. And by bad management and by all that. So even when I was there, like, I mean, a lot of those issues for the Village Voice existed long before I was there. And I saw a lot of people get laid off repeatedly. And I saw people kind of come and go. And that was really heartbreaking. And I think it was just like a really, just a fast way to learn about that. I mean, even, you know, when I was full-time, I moved to club editor and my entire team got laid off. So I also fell victim to that.
Yeah.
When I did have my job there.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that was just something I witnessed from like literally day one, like the very first week I was there. There was like the editor in chief got laid off and the music editor was laid off. The one right before Brian was there, Nora Johnston. And so that was like literally my first week there. And I was like, oh, cool.
Wow.
I guess this is what it's going to be like. So, I mean, all that was, I like had no idea really about the state of journalism before I went to New York. Like, I think my idea of it was like, it's going to be really stable. And then I got to New York and people were like, no, it's not. And so, I mean, being at The Voice was like, it was a big learning experience and what to expect. And also kind of like toughened my skin for what journalism would be like.
So you graduate from NYU and now you're full-time at The Village Voice and tell us just about your experience going from The Village Voice onward.
I mean, the funniest thing is just like going from being in school full time and in my kind of a year after I originally started, you know, working at The Village Voice, like pre full time, kind of in that weird contract writer, you know, intern moment. I was freelancing a lot too. So I started writing for Spin and Rookie, and I think I had written for Vulture by then and just like a lot of random places on top of school and The Village Voice, like working there. So it was kind of funny because it felt like easier to be full-time just because I was doing so much at once when I was in college. So it felt like a better adjustment. I was still able to freelance, which was great, like while I was full-time there. So that's when I started writing for Rolling Stone. Was I like got my first Rolling Stone assignment the weekend after I graduated college, and by that time I was already full-time at The Voice. So I was doing a little bit of freelancing here and there, but it was nice to be just kind of like in one place. And I think I was also like hustling even harder when I was right before I went full-time and when I was still in school, just because being reminded constantly that there was just greatly diminishing staff jobs at a lot of places when I was in college just kind of made me want to be able to establish myself as a freelancer just in case, and came in handy when I did have to be a full-time freelancer in the couple months between The Village Voice and Rolling Stone. But it was great. There weren't a lot of changes. Honestly, it was just like I didn't have class anymore and I was doing almost the same thing I was doing before, just like doing calendar listings. And I was just doing more editing then because I was like editing the music listings for the paper and doing the same kind of writing I was doing before. So it was just kind of like what I was doing for 2 years minus school plus benefits, which was nice. So it was good.
Yeah. Talk to us a little bit about that hustle. Like, were you coming up with pitches and just saying, okay, I think this would be a great angle and reaching out, or what did that look like?
It was a mixture of things. I'm fortunate that like The Village Voice had such a grand network of current and former writers and editors there who were working in a lot of different publications, just and also still based in New York. So a lot of my early freelance assignments came from people being familiar with what I was writing for The Village Voice because they had been there for years, and so they still read it regularly, and they were still freelancing for it, and so they would like put me in touch with other editors. And so I think also because I was so young at that point, I was like 19, 20 when I was like starting to write for them. So that kind of caught a lot of people's attention, which was great. And so just because I was writing so regularly, and I ended up, it was like a mixture of people reaching out to me because they were familiar with my work, and then me pitching to people because just like through different networks. But yeah, it was a nice little mixture of that.
And what was your first celebrity interview?
Oh gosh, I don't even remember. I think I want to say that the first really big person I interviewed, because I was doing a lot of interviews that were like local bands. And so a lot of them were just kind of like
up and coming,
you know, doing their thing in Brooklyn and Manhattan at that time. But I want to say it was Courtney Love was the very first person.
Oh, wow. That's crazy. Because of your Kurt Cobain thing. That's crazy.
Yeah, and it was, and I still remember how that happened because it was Jessica Hopper who, she was freelancing for The Voice at the time, and so she was regularly writing a column called Ask Van Landers for The Village Voice's music blog, and it was like an advice column for musicians and whatnot. And so she like was originally supposed to do the Courtney Love interview because they have a very long history together. And then a bunch of stuff popped up and she, you know, and I think around the time, like Courtney was like about to do a couple of shows in Brooklyn. And she also, I think she's released, she released a couple new singles at that point. And it was supposed to be Hopper and then she couldn't do it. And then my editor, Brian, asked me to do it because he knew I was such a huge fan and knew that, and I had, you know, expressed interest in doing it if Hopper couldn't. And I remember emailing Hopper about it. And she was so great. And I was just like, do you have any advice for me? Like, because I knew that she was a tough interview and I knew that. And it was like really intimidating just because I had never interviewed someone that famous and also someone that I had such a long history of being a fan of. And the interview was supposed to be 5 minutes and that was all they were going to give me. And then we ended up being on the phone for like 45. Like, I remember Courtney took like a bathroom break at one point in between. Like, we were just like talking for so long. And that was really cool. And that was just like a nice moment. And just like that was, I remember that also had got me a lot of editors and writers reaching out to me that I still work with. And I remember that being like a very significant turning point for me as like an interviewer and like feeling confident in that, but also just like people recognizing that I was out here doing stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. That's like a big feather in your cap. So I presume that while you continued to work at Village Voice, you continued the hustle. And then what happened after you left the Village Voice?
Yeah, I was, my time at the Village Voice ended like October 2014.
Mm-hmm.
So I started freelancing for Rolling Stone that summer. My first freelance assignment was like covering this EDM festival, Electric Daisy Carnival.
Mm-hmm.
And then I freelanced for them a little bit here. Like, I wasn't freelancing as often then when I was like full time at the Voice. So I would just because it was like, you know, there wasn't a lot of time to do that. And I also didn't want to overwork myself. So I was writing for Rolling Stone here and there. And I did like a couple interviews and a couple, you know, concert reviews and festival stuff for them. Like, I think I covered Lollapalooza for them that summer and just like a bunch of random one-off things. And then I was still writing for Rookie. I was a Rookie contributor for about 2 years. Like, I would write like maybe like a piece a month, depending on what was happening, and maybe a couple extra like music interviews here and there. And those were kind of, Rookie and Rolling Stone were kind of the two big things I was doing while I was full time. And then once my like department was laid off at The Voice, I was still writing for Rolling Stone pretty regularly, and I got more assignments from them, which was great. Kind of had started the process of interviewing for my first position at Rolling Stone, like immediately after. And then, yeah, I wrote for like Cosmo and Vulture. And I think I wrote some stuff for Spin around that time. Like, it was just kind of like whatever popped up. And thankfully, like, a lot of the editors and writers I'd worked with before were aware. And so they helped out and assigned me stuff. And I started pitching a lot more. But yeah, I was full-time freelance only for about like 3 months.
Mm-hmm. And I assume it's easier to be full-time at a media publication than doing freelance.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, it was just like especially concerning just because I didn't know what it would look like long-term to support myself. I was still like getting paid from them.
You get the unemployment benefits, you get the unemployment check. Yeah.
Yeah. So that was just like the first month. And then it was like, luckily, like I'd already started hustling then, and then the freelance checks rolled in, but then it was just like, I knew it wasn't sustainable for myself. And so. Mm-hmm.
What's kind of your take on the media landscape nowadays? You know, it's sort of been an interesting evolution. Obviously, there was like the big fear and dread, like that printed media was going to become obsolete. Now we're kind of in this trend where we have a lot of tech people buying up media properties, et cetera. I'm just curious, what's kind of your own personal outlook or opinion about sort of where media is headed?
My opinion on it changes constantly, mostly because I think what we should be expecting changes at such a rapid pace. And I think it's harder than ever to keep up. And I also think sometimes people jump the gun on what parts to keep up with faster than they should, just in terms of like big changes to how media companies are run and what their focus on shifts a little bit more quickly than I think is necessary. I don't know. I think there's constantly great content and there's constant, like, really, really excellent writing happening all the time. And I think that that should be invested in above all else, no matter what. And I think the focus should always be on the writers and should be on who is like the people who are building the voice of the publication.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, like I do think there should be a lot of emphasis on, you know, the people doing a lot of visual accompaniment, like the photographers and the editor, the photo editors and video people. And if there's like an audio component to your publication, like that, all of that should be working well together. But I think always like the writers and editors should be always an emphasis on that. And I think some publications are thought that they shouldn't emphasize on that as much and then realize that that was false. But I'm happy that where I'm at, the focus has always been on the writing and on the journalism. And that's been really empowering.
And then I'm curious about because you're a music writer, what's kind of your take on where music is headed, where the music industry is headed, because that's another industry that's obviously gone through such a huge upheaval and change, and Spotify and all these things coming down the pike with tech and music. I'm just curious on your take on that.
I mean, I'm excited to see what happens next. I think everything that happens is typically, most of the time, it's more about being user-friendly and also kind of like listener-oriented in those changes. I think there are ways that have yet to be figured out on how to best coalesce a lot of things that make music as artist friendly as it is user friendly. But I'm not the person to figure that out. But I think that with time and investment, and also kind of like record companies letting go of a lot of the old school approaches to music and old school approaches to how the industry is meant to function, I think it could make it a lot easier. But until then, it's going to keep feeling very jumbled and very disorienting. And yeah, I think everyone's kind of relearning what the music industry even is and what the function of it is anymore. I don't know, but I'm glad that I haven't taken away from like really great music continuing to be put out.
Yeah, absolutely. That's a great point. And I think also, and just curious to hear your opinion on this, like the it seems like, you know, the traditional hierarchy has kind of been removed of the upper echelon of pop stars and the record labels pitching, and that, you know, it's just a very select few, to now there's viral stars, there's people that have just blown up on Spotify or YouTube that are now kind of dominating, you know, with no kind of official industry influence. So I'm just curious about what you think about all that.
Yeah, I mean, we were always just chipping away at like the very tip of the iceberg of what music even is. Like there's so much that has yet to even break through that maybe like I'm always shocked by, like, if I come across an artist who has literally like 100 million followers on Instagram and YouTube and Twitter, and then literally like two songs that I've never heard of that are good, but like haven't even broken through yet, but have this very hyper specific fan base. Like that's always so fascinating to me. And I think we're going to keep seeing like things like that kind of be unearthed, but also, I don't know, I kind of take, like, I love the idea of there are things that I don't know yet. And I think I think a lot of people have yet to fully appreciate the idea that there are always going to be a million different hyper famous musicians and songs that they have yet to discover.
Yeah.
And it's the first time in music where that's truly happening.
Yeah.
Like there's the underground is like, everything's underground at this point.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think that's kind of exciting and fun. And I like constantly learning about stuff. And I think a lot of people took pride for a long time in not knowing who someone was.
Mm-hmm.
But now all of us don't know a lot of these artists. And so I don't know, I think it's kind of exciting. I like learning about new people, and I like learning new music, and I like seeing what, you know, the kids are listening to and what teens are super obsessed with. And so it's kind of, it's a fun little scavenger hunt.
Yeah,
and
I love that.
People aren't fully comfortable with that yet. Mm-hmm. Or like, I don't know, I think a lot of the industry and a lot of writers, a lot of magazines, like I think people just like aren't used to that, and they aren't comfortable with it. And I think that it's kind of fun to explore that and get out of the comfort zone of what's being said to us.
That's so well put. I love that. Yeah, there's just, you can no longer really be a music snob because there's going to be...
Yeah, it doesn't exist.
Right.
Like the idea of like knowing everything just doesn't exist anymore because we don't know everything. Like there's things being released on new platforms every day that we're still discovering and still learning about. Like there are, you know, things that are disappearing as quickly as they're arriving, and people who are, you know, launching careers and ending music careers, or yeah, it's just, it's really, it's a wacky time, but it's, I think if you embrace that it's going to keep being a little wacky and weird, then that makes it more fun.
Yeah, that's a great point. I love that. So just to wrap up, because we're running short on time and I know you have things to do, I'm just curious, like last words of advice, if somebody wants to get into a music writing career nowadays, is internships, you think, still the way to go?
Yeah, I think internships, I mean, writing for yourself is super important no matter what. I think freelancing, it's hard. I mean, it's hard to break through in the freelance world. I think internships are the best way to kind of make those connections and meet writers and editors and let them know that you are very serious about the profession and very serious about it, because I think a lot of emphasis is being put on people editors can trust again, more so than ever before, because they want to really emphasize these people who are paying attention and care and want to be in the know and want to explore and learn constantly. But yeah, I think internships and freelancing and writing for yourself and like having writing that you're proud of that you can show to an editor who's never worked with you before and present to the world is always really crucial. And I don't think it's never a bad time to do DIY with writing and have like your own blog or create a zine or things like that. Like that part is never dead. So no matter what, you can be your own vehicle for your voice.
I like that a lot. Well, how can people find you on social media? What's the best way?
I am on Twitter all the time. And my Twitter is Oh Hey Brittany, OHHEYBRITTANY. And I am also always on Rolling Stone. So yeah, you can read my writing there every day.
Cool. Awesome. Thank you so much, Brittany. Really appreciate your time today.
Thank you for having me.
Again, big thanks to Brittany for a great interview, and it's a good thing to know that none of us can truly be music snobs anymore. You can find Brittany on Twitter at OhHeyBrittany, OhHeyBrittany, or just look her up on Rolling Stone, Brittany Spanos, SPANOS, as she continues to keep us all informed on the stories of music and where music is going. Really great stuff. So thus ends another week of Hey, How'd You Get That Music Job? Grateful to all of you for continuing over a year later to walk this path with us and to continue to spread the word all about Hey, How You Get That Music Job. I am your host, L Ariel. You can find me on social media at LARIEL Music. Also, the website is LARIELmusic.com. That's LARIELmusic.com. And Hey, How'd You Get That Music Job is also on social media at Music Jobs Podcast on Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, and more. So go on and follow us and we'll follow you back. So I hope everyone continues to have a really good, can't believe it's October. I love Halloween, so I'm very excited for October, but I hope everyone is having a good October so far. Just keep the faith and remember to keep on hustling, pursue that dream, and don't you give up.